on the 1 yard line with their backs against the wall.
This ain't a game to me. If you think it's a game, get the fuck off of this bus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome one, welcome all, and welcome back to the Believe in Iowa State podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Carter.
And I'm your host, Cody Vanciello.
Cody, I mean, what a dominant win yesterday. How was your experience in the press box? How was that?
Yeah, so it went pretty well, and I think I really had a really fun time getting to cover the game as kind of like a practice run for the Iowa State University Greenlee School of Journalism. So that opportunity was really great. And my view, it was really nice because I got to see the entire field and really get to look at it from a perspective like what you would see as like a coach. So getting to see where all like the all 22 kind of lines up and just having that really shaped my perspective and understanding how to read defenses and seeing what the offensive coordinators see and why they will call certain plays and what play they call based on the defensive formations that they see.
Yeah. I mean, that's that, you know, all 22s definitely, you know, if you're a casual, it will help you like strengthen you into a football nerd to a real, real elite ball knower. Cause ball knowers like will watch all 22s and then you're like, okay, see, this is why, you know, you'll pick up on certain tendencies on what the defense is doing and why they're in that, or why do you think the coordinator is calling that play because there's a certain tendency that defense is doing. So yeah, that's pretty cool. But I want to get your just raw reaction of last night's game.
This was way more dominant than I think a lot of expected, including myself, because I mean, we saw the line go down for this game as it was getting closer to kickoff. It started out as 8.5 favorite Iowa State, but as the days went down, the hours counted down, the line started to trend more towards Arizona, and I think by kickoff, it got to -3.5 in favor of Iowa State. So there were a lot of people putting money that Arizona could make it a competitive game, or even perhaps going to Ames, Iowa, and beat Iowa State just off the talent of Noah Fifita, what he could possibly do. And also, we know the history of Iowa State coming out of the bye week and didn't know what shape both teams would be in. But Iowa State just showed from basically the first kickoff that they were going to be the more dominant team, assert their will, and that's exactly what they did. Getting what I think was a really big opportunity miss off of that kickoff fumble, which was ultimately called back. But Arizona, they actually really had a good drive after the reversal from the fumble called that was initially called on that open kickoff. That Noah Fifita was driving, and Ismail Mahdi had a really great game for the Wildcats, 13 carries, 85 yards, and Ismail Mahdi was finding a lot of holes, and he was getting a lot of chunk yardage on the ground, but on the first drive, and they were moving well. But Iowa State was able to get a stop on third down and force a 46-yard field goal, and the kick off of a bad snap went wide right, and then after that, I think that was just when Iowa State decided to put the foot in the gas, and they did. I mean, Rocco Beck making a great, like, just a great throw down the field to Chase Soule. And with Chase Soule, what a day it was for Chase Soule. He absolutely broke out. This was his, like, defining performance, and he had a couple of big plays. The first quarter, obviously, to set up the first touchdown for Iowa State with that big 40-plus yard grab to set them up at the one, and then to get the – I believe it was one of the three touch pushes that Rocco Beck had.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the stat line, dude, it's crazy. 10 rushes for -9 yards and 3 touchdowns. That is the most Iowa State stat line I have ever seen.
I that's gonna go down in history. Just imagine telling somebody that just in a random like random college football trivia. It's like which quarterback had like this stat line, and it's like every Iowa State fan's gonna know exactly who it is just because.
I know. Pick me.
Yeah, but I mean that was an effective thing for Iowa State just in those goal line situations, just really with the quarterback sneak. And I think on that first one, Rocco Beck wasn't even touched for like 3 yards inside the end zone. It was just easy grabs for him. And then we just saw what was unexpected, because coming into this game, everybody understood that Kyle Conradi and Jace Gilbert were going to be out for the Cyclones. So we didn't know exactly what the point afters and the fields were look like. But Iowa State comes out in a two-point conversion form, and you just see a pitch to Gabe Burkle on the left side of the field, and we get the two-point conversion. We're like, okay, I think this is a game where Taylor Mauser is just going to absolutely drop his nutsack all over this Arizona defense. And that's basically how this game went, because from that point on, Iowa State got out to a 22-0 lead at one point. That included a John Tess Williams pick. I mean, he just read Noah Fifita's eyes. He was all over that route for the interception, set up another touchdown. And Arizona, they did get a score to make it a little bit respectable heading into halftime, but Iowa State got the ball. They immediately went down and got a touchdown from there. The game was over after Iowa State scored their first touchdown in the second half.
Yeah, it just seemed like after we went up 22-0 that they just gave up. I will say, like, one of the things that I did like is that the offensive line showed up and showed out. They were mauling the entire game. If you look at the stats, it says there was only 73 yards rushing, but that's because of those two sacks. And it's so silly that sacks count against your rushing total. If you really think about it, we still ran over 100 yards, and it really felt like it was more, because Carson Hansen was getting chunk runs left and right. He was getting stronger as the game went by. And Rocco just is a wizard at these. He is a wizard at these QB sneaks.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that's just been instilled. And that was one of the things we want to really put in. Because, I mean, Iowa State for a while had not really figured out how to punch into the end zone from those, like, short yard goal line situations. But with Rocco Beck, I think you got a guy who can just – he wants to run the football in those situations and just get easy points. So really great showing. And I mean, Rocco was another efficient night. And I mean, even with the interception, I think he was just trying to extend the play. And that was like deep into the fourth quarter where he was just trying to extend the play, put up some more points. So that pick, maybe you want back, but I mean, it was basically at the end of the game. So really nothing, but that turnover doesn't mean nothing. But speaking of passing, the trick play with Ben Bramer at quarterback off of the jet motion to Brett Eskelton. Did you have that on your bingo card?
I did not have that on my bingo card. And the fact that that ball was beautiful too. It was right on the money. I was feeling for Eskelton. I wanted him to get that. I was like, daggone it.
Yeah, we had a couple of those where it's like the ball was just placed a little bit ahead, or just timing was a little bit better. It for sure would have been a touch, like it sure would have been a touchdown. But I saw this tweet after that, after the play. I see Cameron Peniel tweet out, Iowa State tight end Ben Bramer has matched Mark Gronowski's longest pass completion this season. So yeah, I think that tells you what is going on in Iowa City. But I mean, real quick, going over to them, they had a really they were in the game against Indiana. They made it difficult for the Indiana Hoosiers to score points, because I think a lot of us expected Indiana to go into Kinnick Stadium and pound the crap out of Iowa, but that wasn't the case. They kept it a competitive game. But ultimately, Mark Gronowski, I think he went out late with an injury, because we saw it was like on the sideline. He was on the sideline, the bike or something, but he didn't come back in the game, and Hank Brown came in. But Iowa was just not able to take advantage of keeping Indiana's offense limited to 20 points. So just another painful loss for Iowa. They still have not been able to beat a ranked team, whether away or in Kinnick Stadium. So things are getting dire, but they do have a few more opportunities ahead, as we'll get into a little later, as they will they will host Penn State and Oregon. We'll get to the national landscape a little later on. But for Iowa State, this was just a great win. This was a dominant win. I think this continues to quell a bit of the slaying some more demons, because obviously Matt Campbell's been criticized for really struggling out of the bye week, but this clearly showed that wasn't the case. In Arizona, it was their first real true road test against a really competitive team, because the past three games for them before their bye week, which was the same time as ours, they had played Hawaii, Weber State, and a Kansas State that isn't really what was expected out of them in the preseason. So you really had to go in Arizona understanding, like, they haven't really played anybody up to the levels that you expect if you want to be competitive. And this was their first test, and clearly this was a reality check. I mean, Brett Brennan said it himself that this was a kind of a litmus test for them, just paraphrasing, and they weren't able to get that red zone. They weren't able to score, and I think it comes down to the red zone accountability. So Arizona's going to have a lot to really go over in film study, but they do have a couple of good home games lined up with Oklahoma State and BYU. So we'll see how Arizona does coming off of this loss in Ames.
Yes, definitely. I still think that Arizona's a good team. This is one thing that I do want to talk about. I think in this game, we finally saw the emergence of a number one receiver. Like, the stuff that we got from Chase Soul last night, yeah, I think what fans expected from when we came in. But obviously, as you know from four transfer receivers, it usually takes them a month to adjust. But, man, 4 for 146, man, if he can start doing that and emerge, this offense can go places, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of the same pattern we've seen out of these transfer wide receivers, whether it was Michael Petway, Xavier Hutchinson, and Jaden Higgins, too. It took Jaden Higgins some time to really get comfortable, and look what Jaden Higgins is doing right now. I mean, he actually just got his first career touchdown in the NFL, so shout out to him for getting that. It's a really great start to his rookie season with the Houston Texans. But yeah, it's a trend that continues to show, and I think it just comes down to really good confidence. And I remember, and then it also is more impressive for Chase Soul, because in the post-game press conference, Matt Campbell mentioned that Chase Soul missed up most of fall camp and really spent, like, he only had him back for the week of Kansas State. And that was mostly to get him, like, even, like, acclimated with, like, what is going on or whatever. So really get him introduced to the system and getting those reps. But it has been impressive just how fast Chase Soul has been able to learn that. So really like to see that out of the East Carolina transfer. And, I mean, even get complimented with Xavier Townsend, who we did see glimpses of at the Arkansas State game. And then we know what we have out of Brett Eskelson, Donald Rubin, and Carson Brown. So really, having the number one guy is going to be nice, but having the depth as well is going to be huge. And then we did see the return of Gabe Burkle. He got some great moments and coming off injury. But I think one story that is going to be important to look at is the defensive injuries towards the end of the game, where you did see Dominique Orange and Jontez Williams come out of the game at points in time, and even Rocco Becht. And you, basically, towards the end of the game, it just looked like every play – it was another defender dropping. So, I mean, I think at one point, Tayshaun James and Cummings Holman went to the locker room. So, and that put into question why Matt Campbell kept in a lot of the starters, even in garbage time in that fourth quarter. But I think in Campbell's case, it's just about like putting, like matching up different combinations, trying them out, and seeing which one works best. So I think from a coaching perspective, you're trying to find like the best like combination to put out defensively. So I get it. But yeah, maybe you should have kept, in hindsight, maybe some of those players should not have been playing in that fourth quarter. But from a coaching perspective, it's understandable why they wanted to do what they did with the defense. And it looks like the injuries that we had aren't too serious. We did get confirmation as well that Jeremiah Cooper is going to be out for the rest of the season. So that's going to be a big blow for the secondary. But I think our secondary is built to cover, and they did really well with the emergence of Jamison Patton. We know what we get on Marcus Neal. So I think the secondary is in really safe hands.
Completely agree. It's a next man up mentality. I will say compared to last year, I will say that a lot of this team has depth basically because of trial by fire last season, because there were so many injuries everywhere. So I say for me, I think Trey Bell's up for the challenge. He played extremely well. And then you see the other younger guys that come in there and just, because Quentin Taylor got some snaps yesterday as well. So the fact that he, you know, was able to get some quality snaps in, we're probably going to be seeing a whole lot of people here. And the good and the positive thing about Jermaine Cooper injury is that he is he only played four games, so he can medically redshirt. So if he wanted to come back next season, he could.
That was gonna be huge, because Jermaine Cooper is one of the staples of the team. I mean, he's basically one of the captains, and I mean, he had like shown a lot, because, and it's really good to see that in that case he can get the redshirt and come back for another year.
Yeah, it's going to be huge, because basically you see this team is pretty young, so even next year everybody can come back. Obviously, you know, you see some of the tight ends and they all can come back too. They're all pretty young. I think Brett Bramer's probably going to test the waters to see what his draft grade could be, because I could see him and Burkle probably going to the draft, but we'll have to see. We still got plenty of season left, but you know, that was, you know, our recap of the game. I want to take a look. Obviously, we have our preview show later, but I want to take a look into Cincinnati. We were talking pre-show earlier, I believe before this afternoon, the Iowa State was a 2.5-point favorite. And now with all the injury news, they somehow are now a 2.5-point underdog to the Cincinnati Bearcats.
Yeah, I think we did see. And I think also that comes down to Cincinnati's performance, because their offense was really impressed. Like their offense against Kansas, they put up 600 yards of total offense against the Jayhawks in David Booth Memorial Stadium. And that included 200 plus rushing yards on the ground. And I mean, Brandon Sorsby thus far, 10 touchdowns, only one interception on the year. And also, he's the leading rusher as well, which is odd to see. But if it works, it works. But, yeah, I think Cincinnati, they're actually showing signs of being an improved team. And there were really a couple of cases. I think they definitely had a chance to beat Nebraska had they not made a few mistakes. But the Cincinnati squad is looking much more improved. So I'm thinking this could be a little bit more of a challenging game. But this game is at 11 a.m., on Saturday, ESPN2. So I think this is going to be early kickoff, and we'll see like potentially what Iowa State's going to be what they're able to do on the rope and have the defense tested, because Iowa State's defensive unit should be a much better unit than what Kansas has, because Kansas, that defensive performance was really ugly out of the Jayhawks. And obviously, everyone knows the connection. Like, a lot of Iowa State people know the connection to with Tyson Bite being a former defensive coach at Iowa State, being the current defensive coordinator in Cincinnati. So Bite definitely knows a lot about building up the defense that Iowa State runs. So, you know, he can give input to Cincinnati's offense on how they can beat the defense. But this game, I think I like it, mate, as Iowa State being underdogs, because it's fun. It's like, it still gives Iowa State something to really stay motivated, like to keep on their heels and stay motivated with, knowing the kind of opponents Cincinnati has. And I mean, this is going to be one of those, like, this is going to be the beginning of a two-game road stretch, where you first head to Cincinnati and then you head to Boulder, Colorado. But I think this game, this should be a really good test for where Cincinnati's at in terms of where they can be potentially in the middle of the Big 12. And Iowa State, obviously, they want to continue to be among the top of the Big 12 to stay up with the likes of Texas Tech, Arizona State, and BYU.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. We really are getting into basically nut cutting time, to where now we're going to see who's going to be the elite of the elite in this conference. I believe Iowa State is one of these elite teams. With that, we are now going to take a look at the Big 12 slate and the national slate. So, Cody, if you could share your screen and go to ESPN, let's break down these games, because there were a lot of good games yesterday.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know. Were you able to stay up all like Friday night to watch some Big 12 slash Pac 12 after dark? Because that's
what yes. Oh my gosh. Let's get into it.
Yeah. So Arizona State at home for the first home game of Big 12 play. They hosted number 24 TCU. TCU got out to a 17-0 lead in the second quarter. But Arizona State, Sam Levitt able to connect to Jordan Tyson, and Jordan Tyson had himself a really good day, 126 yards, two touchdowns. And Arizona State was able to cut into the lead, like tie the game and eventually take the lead with, I think, about halfway through the fourth quarter. But Sam Levitt really emerging as one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. And just where does this put, like, does this game show more of a sign for where TCU is in the Big 12, or does this show that Arizona State, we know they're back, so there were some worries about them after the Mississippi State game, but clearly they have made adjustments from that game, and they're looking to retain their crown as Big 12 champions. Meanwhile, for TCU, you're looking to rebound after what was, you had the win right there in your hands, but you just let it slip. So if you're Sonny Dykes, you're Josh Huber, and you're the Horned Frogs, you got to think to yourself, you had that game in hand. You just let it slip through your hands. And how do you go on and prepare and not let this game turn, like this loss turn into a slump?
You gotta learn how to finish games. Like I know we've heard about Josh Huber about being like that Heisman candidate type of guy. And he has the numbers to back it up, but you have to, if you're that type of guy or that you think that he's that type of caliber guy, you got to finish these games like this. You can't give up big leads like this. Unfortunately, we did say though, that the defense of TCU could be their demise. Like their offense is amazing, but their defense really can't stop anyone, to be honest. And Arizona State is just has the heart of a champion. There's a reason why they won this conference last year. So being resilient at home is a huge win for Arizona State as they move on to a much needed bye week for them.
Yeah. And I mean, take a look just real quick more of like scores. So yeah, Sam Levitt, 291 passing yards, two touchdowns. And Jordan Tyson, this duo between Sam Levitt and Jordan Tyson is going to be one to really look out for. So I'm kind of I'm excited for this game, like for this Arizona State game come November 1st. But before that, we do have we'll get there. We'll get to talking to Arizona State when it comes to time. But back to the Big 12 slate late night, the Big 12, Pac 12 after dark. I don't know what we're calling it, but it's the exact they're the exact same thing. The Houston Cougars they survived a upset bid from the Oregon State Beavers. Struggle for Houston at first, but Connor Wigman and Willie Fritz were able to put it together and get a 27-24 win in overtime, and Houston escapes Corvallis undefeated.
Yeah, I mean, this just it doesn't matter who it is, Cody. It is hard to win on the road. This is a gutsy win by the Cougs. Obviously, Oregon State is no good, but hey, when you go on the road in a weird spot on a Friday night when you're playing two time zones back, that can be a weird spot, and your body clock is probably usually used to being sleep. This sets up for a great game next week as Houston is set to host Texas Tech next week. So I'm really, really excited for how that's going to set up for next week's games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Texas Tech is going to be coming off the bye week as well. So I'm curious to see how they're going to feel heading into the game against Houston. And what I think was, I don't think many of us had Houston like looking this good, but I mean, that's going to be a big opportunity for Houston. If they can find like in that game against Texas Tech to potentially usurp Texas Tech as one of the top contenders in the Big 12. So that was the Friday night slate for the Big 12. And I think this is a really good spot for the Big 12, especially having those like former Pac 12 schools taking the opportunity to be like the game on a Friday night. So really good opportunity to really get your name out. But yeah, anyways, back to on Saturday, we alluded to this a little bit when we were talking about Cincinnati. Cincinnati goes on the road to David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium to take down the Jayhawks 37-34. This was just like, if you look at this like kind of score breakdown, this kind of looks like what you would see in the old Big 12 when it was just defense was optional. Look at those passing yards from Brandon Soares and Jalen Daniels.
Yeah, 388 for Soares, 445 for Jalen Daniels. So those are gaudy numbers. KU, I mean, their defense struggled was an understatement, but I mean, look at that. Emmanuel Henderson, 214 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then you have Cyrus Allen for Cincinnati, 11 for 128 and 2 touchdowns. Like, this is an absolute barn burner. I was definitely paying attention to this while I was at the tailgates in the afternoon.
Yeah, so this was definitely a way for you to start your day. But look, just some of these like third down efficiencies, a lot of third downs for Cincinnati, but just overall. And I mean, if you're Kansas, what do you have to do? Like, what do you need to do to fix your defense? Because you cannot be giving up. Like, both teams gave up 600 yards of offense, but Cincinnati is able to get the late score and win the game. So what do you have to do if you're Kansas to fix these kind of things?
I mean, at this point, we're 5 games into the season, Cody. I don't know if you can fix it, but maybe, you know, usually at least, you know, in the NFL, when teams know that their defense is struggling, you might have to switch to a ball control type of offense to where you just you dominate time of possession, run the football, and then hope that you take long sustained drives and take enough time off the clock so that your defense will be on the field. So, I mean, I feel like that might be the one solution that you can do to limit other defenses from scoring. Yep. Or their offenses from scoring.
Yep. Yeah. So, that game, barn burner for sure. Cincinnati with a big win. And, yeah, they're going to get ready to host Iowa State. Actually, staying in the state of Kansas, we head to Manhattan, Kansas, where Kansas State, they finally got a win over an FBS team. They finally did it. They beat the Central Florida Golden Knights 34-20, and they actually look okay. They look like a decent team for once this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, they finally figured out that Avery Johnson is best when he runs the football. He was able to run the football yesterday. That is when he is at his most effective. I feel like now I think K-State can go on a run. I think you see they're running games in their schedule. They have a chance to get a few wins in this stretch.
Yeah. You take a look at their stretch real quick. Yeah, you mentioned at Baylor versus TCU and at Kansas. So I think this 3-game stretch can really be crucial for Kansas State to get back into at least the race. Because, I mean, they're 1-1, so realistically they can still be in the race. But as a Big 12 person, do you really want Kansas State to win the Big 12 considering the losses they've taken?
Probably not. It would be a bad look, especially if one of your teams, double-digit win teams, like, but, you know, teams can go on a run and, you know, and get hot, but probably you do not want them to do that, because then if it's a 3-loss team, that I guess you still probably could, but then at that point you're like, well, like, you lost against this person, so that could be counted against you during this selection. So let's say you're an undefeated team and you lose to a 3-loss. I mean, but hey, we saw this same thing in 2022 when Kansas State won the Big 12, but TCU was still able to make the 4-team playoff. So, I mean, who knows? But this is a 12-team playoff we're talking about. But who knows what could happen in that scenario?
Mm-hmm. So, and hey, on the, I guess the silver lining is maybe your Iowa State's win over them looks a little bit better now because Kansas State looks actually decent again. So who knows? Can't say the same though for Oklahoma State. Things are going from bad to worse down in Stillwater.
I will say they did. Although they did lose, they did show a lot more fight in yesterday's game. So that is promising for them.
Yeah, but the other day, still 1-3, and I think I did see that Oklahoma State fired their defensive coordinator that they brought in like for this season. They just brought him in this season, and they've dismissed him. So a lot of turnarounds going to be happening, and I mean, I guess it's a sign of anything that the high money donors want change, so they're going to do what they want to do. So it's clear they still have deep pockets. It's just putting in the right spot, and if the administration really cares. So, anyways. Yeah, a great rebound win for Baylor after losing against Arizona State at home. And another team that got a really big bounce back win was the Utah Utes. They go into Morgantown and they just curb stomp West Virginia.
Yeah, 48-14. Devin Dampier, 21-26, 237, 4 TDs, 1 TD on the ground. Yeah, Utah is proving, hey, they're like, hey, we're not done yet. We may have gotten stomped by Tech, but that might show how good Tech is, but we won't know until next weekend, until they go on the run at Houston. So it should be an interesting way to see, but yeah, the way West Virginia, we are sort of looking to see that they're sort of the team that everybody is expecting them to be bad, and they've gotten blown up by like 30 plus points in their first two conference games. It's going to be a long year for West Virginia.
Yep. but I mean, what would be funny is if Pitt goes on a long run and then West Virginia could just rub it in the face of the fact that they lost to the if West Virginia continues on this trend of losing and Pitt keeps on winning, it's going to be really funny just hearing the banter between those two fan bases, especially West Virginia saying, yeah, y'all lost to us, though, so I don't know what that says. just the backyard brawl banter would be amazing if that happens. But, I mean, there was action not just in the Big 12, but across the country. And back to that Friday night slate, number 8 Florida State goes down to the Virginia Cavaliers in overtime. Is it time to start hitting the panic button in Florida State again?
No, what I think is this is a classic. This is a game that we probably should have paid more attention to, because if you look at the next game on Florida State's schedule, it's Miami. So this was a complete letdown look ahead for the Seminoles. They were looking ahead to play in Miami. They thought they could just show up and win against Virginia, who now leads the ACC at 2-0. So it's a wild world. Virginia is actually decent. So if you look at their schedule, they could go on the run. But it just seems like every time when you say that about an ACC team, they always lose a game they shouldn't.
I take Virginia. Does Virginia have what it takes? And do they have what it takes to be the Arizona State of last year? Do you think Virginia is set up to be that kind of team?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I was just gonna say, because look at like their schedule outside of Louisville.
That's what I'm saying. They have the schedule where they can make a run and maybe go 9-3, 10-2. But I just with the goofiness of this league, I'm not gonna put my name to Virginia, because I don't know if they can do it. Because every time we have put a name on an ACC team, they lose something stupid. That's the hilarity of the ACC.
Man, I think that's why I've heard some people call the ACC the tank conference, because as soon as you put a name to it and to put maybe money on it, it's gone. Don't ever. I can't trust the ACC. I just can't. It's against my principles right now. But
South Park reference, and it's gone.
Yep. Love it. God. I mean, this is a random caveat. Did you see the photo of Matt Campbell as a South Park character?
No, I gotta see this.
Hold on. Okay. Oh, hold on. I'm gonna just send it to you personally, but
okay.
Yeah, I'll send it to you like kind of like off air. I'll send it off air, but
okay.
It's hilarious. It's like I never thought I'd see Matt Cable as a South Park character, but yeah, I just thought of that for some reason.
Hilarious.
Yep. All right. So going to the national slate, Ohio State. This was actually close in the first half. 1 point it was set. It was only 7-3 lead for Ohio State, but they were able to pull away eventually to win against Washington 24-6. So that second half was really crucial for Ohio State. But does that? How much does that say for how strong Washington could be in this season?
I mean, it shows that Washington that Jed Fish in Washington. They're building for the future, and the fact that they hung in there with the number one team in the nation, it tells you something about how their foundation is. And Washington is a good team that they definitely will be bowling. It's just a matter of how many wins they'll get to.
Yeah, and with that, Ohio State, they retained the number one ranking overall, and they're looking to be a prime to get like that Big Ten title, because I think that's been gone for them for some time, is getting that Big Ten championship. And we talk about the Big Ten championship, we got a rematch of the Big Ten title game from last year in Happy Valley and another whiteout. So yes, we did. There were two whiteouts in the country this year, this past Saturday with
at the Iowa same State time,
basically, which is crazy. I was like, what? How is this possible? But yeah, This Oregon Penn State, this thing was not looking good. This was like an ugly slugfest. It was an offensive struggle for both teams in the first half. Oregon able to get to kind of pull away, and you think at that with the point they did, scoring a touchdown in the fourth quarter, and with Penn State inability to move the football, you're like, this game's over. But Penn State able to rally the team, rally the offense, and push into overtime. But Oregon able to pull off the win in overtime, and they go into Happy Valley, and they turn that place into Depressive Valley as the Oregon Ducks get a win 30-24 and big games. James Franklin, this Penn State just cannot seem to get over that hump and getting that big game win.
Yeah, it's another case of big game James Franklin not being able to pull it off once again. And for Oregon, what a huge win with Dante Moore. I mean, you think about Oregon. Everybody thought that maybe they might take a step back. I think Oregon might be ahead of schedule. Oregon is really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Oregon, they're a little petty, because did you see what they did to did you see what they did in the post game where they ran right up to the student section? Because I think they saw what happened when the Virginia students rushed the field the previous night, and it was like, Oregon was just giving the Penn State student section the business, and people were like, "Yeah," and people were like, "Wow, okay, there are a bunch of students. You are athletes. You should not behave like this." But I'm like, "Listen, if the students, if they're gonna dish it out, they should be able to take it." And so that's just right. Kind of a prince, yeah. And the players, yeah, they just went in and beat your team in your stadium, so they have a right to talk, because. Because, yeah, they beat the guys out there that are supposed to represent you, and love it. And then Dan Lanning on his Instagram, I saw a picture. He had the caption of the story, my new favorite song or something like that. It was Mo Bamba.
Ha! I love that.
Dude, I think right now, yeah, he owns the song. Oregon owns the song because they just went.
I love that.
So yeah, I love pettiness like that from coaches, and it shows mid personality. We need more things like that in college football, because I cannot stand these like boring cookie cutter kind of things. So it's really good to see we got good personalities. And speaking of good personalities, oh wait, real quick, thank you, Thomas Ornis. Great show, guys. Keep it up. Yeah, thank you very much. And
thanks, Tom.
I was watching. I just saw that you did upload the Iowa State Arizona game, so I'm definitely after the show. I'm definitely watching it back. I'm watching it on repeat. But yeah, back to our scores. Yeah, Lane Kiffin. A lot of the aftermath this week. Do you see Whit Weeks is dating Lane Kiffin's daughter, and that was one of the big stories out of like LSU Ole Miss this week.
Yeah, that was nuts, dude. I saw that happen this week because I was like, oh, that could be a possible distraction. But, I mean, the defense stepped up in that game, and they were able to get – Ole Miss was able to get a huge win at home. I don't know if you saw what he said after the game, but he appreciated the students for not rushing the field because he said that now they expect to win games like that. And I respect that. It was just like – It was just like when when they set up the things for the Iowa game for us to rush the field. I'm like, you guys, nobody's gonna rush the field. Like we expect to win this game now. Like, come on now.
Yeah, I think they just do that out of precaution, just like in general. But it was kind of funny seeing that. But yeah, they just.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Ole Miss, this is a big win for you, and you kind of like we didn't know what we would see. But I mean, the Trinidad Chambliss, 314 yards and a touchdown. So they were able to limit LSU to under 20 points and ultimately get themselves a big win. And Ole Miss is looking to get that elusive SEC championship. And they're 3-0 to start. So they got a leg up in the SEC race and keeping it in within the SEC. You've got number 17, Alabama, going to the Sanford Stadium and being number 5. Georgia, Ty Simpson with 276 yards and 2 touchdowns. So really this was a big win for Kalen DeBoer and company. And I think Kalen DeBoer is keeping the faith of the Alabama fan base by getting this huge win over the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, this was a win that Alabama needed. I think this might have calmed the storm for a bit. But this is a win that Alabama showed that is like, hey, we are not done. We're still here. This is a huge win on the road, and now it sets up for a game that at the beginning of the year, we did not think would be a College Game Day game, but game day will be in Tuscaloosa next week as undefeated Vanderbilt comes into town 4-0. So, let's get into that.
Vanderbilt, yeah, they put up 55 on Utah State and Nashville, and Diego Pavia continues to just cook for the Commodores, 321 yards and 5 touchdowns. Wow. He also contributed 79 yards on the ground and a rushing score. So Vanderbilt is just continuing. Like things are going really well for Diego Pavia and company. And I think if you were to tell a college football fan 10 years ago that Iowa State, Vanderbilt, and we'll get to Indiana next, if you were to tell them that all three of those teams would be ranked and be in contention for their conference champions, their respective conference championships, I think you would have been checked into a mental asylum. You might be checked for severe CTE.
Yeah, bro, I would too. I'd be like, wait, what did you say? Huh?
You might have to get drug test. You might have to drug test that person because it's like, I don't think you would be like, somebody would tell you, I don't think there are enough drugs in the world to convince me that that is actually an actual thing. But yeah, here we are. Iowa State, Vanderbilt, Indiana are all ranked, and they're all undefeated right now in conference and could potentially win their conference title. And for Indiana, this was a beautiful hate watch. Indiana able to go into Kinnick Stadium, and they hold off the Iowa Hawkeyes 20-15. Fernando Mendoza able to come up late with a big score to Surratt. And the big news for Iowa, Mark Ganowski may be out for an extended time. He left the game with an injury. Hank Brown came in. And Iowa, man, things are just –
It's not looking good. He's out for a extended period of time. Like, you're not going to be able to play the same way you are. You actually are going to have to score. Like and the way Hank Brown looked, I don't know. It is not looking good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just I. If I think I this was I think I had this at the beginning of the year. This was a game I had Iowa winning because this was a ranked win that they could do. It's surprising that they just couldn't show up like that. I don't know, man. The struggles continue. So. But Iowa's going to have a couple opportunities left to get that big ranked win, which has been something that's eluded them in their last 11 contests ever since they beat Penn State in 2021. And you look at it, how poetic. In a couple weeks, Iowa does get to host Penn State. So who knows? They could potentially usurp Penn State. And crush their hopes, but we'll look at that when the time comes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things are not looking well in Iowa City.
Not at all.
Yep. Heading down to College Station, number 9, Texas A&M, able to hold off Auburn 16-10. Marcel Reed with 207 yards. This was not a particularly entertaining game. And this was the one that was kind of on before, like, the Iowa State game on the Jumbotron. So it's like,
It was a defensive battle. I believe at one point, Texas A&M was up 13-3. I believe they got – it was either a fumble or an interception that got them into the red zone to where Auburn scored. But, yeah, Texas A&M kicked a field goal, and then I believe they forced a turnover at the end to seal it. So this was a defensive struggle or a defensive battle in this game. So A&M moves to 4-0 and remains undefeated. And I believe they play Mississippi State next week, who was in a barn burner with Tennessee.
Yeah. Mississippi State, they were off to a 4-0 start, and they actually had the lead at one point. And Mississippi State, they look much better than what they were last year. From going, from being 2-10, the worst in the bottom feeder in the SEC, to what they're doing right now, 4-1, and potentially had beaten Tennessee. The state of Mississippi is looking really good, but yeah, really huge win for Tennessee to respond after losing to Georgia and Neyland Stadium. They needed this win desperately. Joey Aguilar with 335 yards and passing touchdown, but yeah, huge road win and a confidence booster. Tennessee's got some confidence back, and they can still look to return to the college football playoff. But for Mississippi State, this is a step in the right direction. Even with a loss like this, this sets them up really well for what could be a really good, a pretty special second year. And they'll get a crack at another ranked opponent as they head to College Station to take on the Aggies at Texas A&M.
Oh, wait, hold on. Go real quick. Look at that game against Texas, hosting them at home. That could be interesting, especially if they win. If they win these next two games against at A&M and at Florida, who knows?
Yeah, that could set up for a huge tilt in the SEC. So really I'm looking at from Mississippi State, and that could set them up really well for what could be a pretty good Egg Bowl during rivalry week if things go well for the Bulldogs.
An underrated rivalry game that I love watching during Thanksgiving week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Heading over to the ACC, Georgia Tech, they survived Wake Forest. Wake Forest, they were giving them everything they had. They're up 17-3 at the half, just really making things difficult for the Yellow Jackets. But Georgia Tech able to get it to overtime and win by one. So Georgia Tech, they survive an upset scare, and they still remain unscathed in the ACC, and they still are looking to potentially be that team from the ACC. It's between them and Miami, but really, you survive this. I think if you're Georgia Tech, you just got to burn the tape. You got to move forward, because I don't know if you want to like look back at this game.
Yeah, a failed 2-point conversion from them that would have won Wake Forest the game. But yeah, in this era of college football, it is survive and advance. Style points don't matter. You just win, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we want to talk about style points. Missouri, they just poured it on to UMass. I don't know. I mean, that's not saying too much, but hey, when you just absolutely shut out a team for 3 quarters, that's a solid statement. Bo Pribula really didn't do too much. 241 yards and a touchdown, but it was hardy for Missouri, 130 yards on the ground and 3 touchdowns. So this is just Missouri flexing their might, really getting an easy win, and they're 5-0, and they've already played. Wait, was it all five of their games were at home? And
yeah,
and they get another home game at this bye week, and they get to host Alabama. So how about that for Missouri? You get to literally be at home for like the first half of the season.
Hey, you got to take advantage of that. And if you have that advantage in your schedule, you got to take advantage of it. And they have. Missouri starting off 5-0, and they have a golden opportunity to beat Bama at home going after coming out the bye week. So we'll see how Missouri season turns out.
Yeah, that's just crazy to look at, but The big new kickoff game. This game, I was watching this, and this game was it really picked up in the fourth quarter.
It was bow after bow after bow after bow. USC finally took the lead. I'm like, oh no. I was like, is Illinois gonna fall again? But Illinois drives in and gets in the field goal range and wins it at the buzzer. They win 34-32 on homecoming, and Illinois continues their momentum.
Yeah, Illinois rebounding from that just absolute dominate loss, just getting the doors blown off and getting physically dominated by Indiana. So this is a pretty good rebound win for Illinois, and they are feeling a little like they're getting some confidence. Like they're getting confidence back. And looking at this, they're at Purdue before they get a tilt with the number one team in the country, Ohio State, at home. So if you're Illinois, you want to be sure you can take care of business against Purdue. But you can't overlook Purdue, because Purdue could potentially spoil you. I mean, we've seen it sometimes where Purdue hosts the ranked team.
I mean, they survived Purdue last year by 1 point at home. So, I mean.
Yeah, and the Purdue squad this year, I think it's an improved squad. I think it was somewhat competitive with Notre Dame for a little bit.
Yep.
So, yeah, keeping it up with Notre Dame with Notre Dame. They basically were the final nail in the coffin for Sam Pittman at Arkansas, as Notre Dame goes into Fayetteville and absolutely carves up the Razorbacks 56-13. And yeah, Sam Pittman is out at Arkansas.
Yeah, he was underperforming, and yeah, he needed to go. For Notre Dame, this gets them back on track. They can definitely go on a run here. They basically would need to win out basically to probably make the playoff. So they keep their playoff hopes alive with that win.
Yeah. I guess while we're here, take a look at the overall, the AP rankings. So this was kind of like a lot of things, moving pieces. But one thing that I think a lot of Iowa State were surprised about is the fact that we were still number 14. I think personally, this doesn't mean too much, but it's like, whatever. I mean, I'm not surprised Texas Tech is the highest ranked Big 12 school, because I do like Texas Tech, and I wouldn't be surprised. So that tilt at Houston is going to be really good.
Yeah, I will say, like, OU, they're number 5, but Mateer's going to be out for a while, so it's going to be interesting to see how they fare, especially with their quarterback the backup who started last year, who struggled. Let's see if he can continue to or if he can develop and continue to do that. But we're near the end of the podcast, so that means we're going to give a thank you to FanDuel. And since it's Sunday Night Football right now currently, my Cowboys are on Sunday Night Football against the Green Bay Packers. Hopefully we don't get embarrassed today. So we'll see what happens. But let's see what FanDuel has. But if you want to open up FanDuel, Cody, let's see what they have in store.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at this a little earlier. That actually maybe, like, we don't know, because obviously there's a lot that's going into the game. But, yeah, the line just shifted. It looks like right before kickoff. Yeah, Dallas is a 6.5-point underdog against Green Bay in Arlington. And, yeah, the game literally just kicked off as we're talking right now, so it looks like Dallas kicked off the Green Bay. They'll have the first possession. But taking a look at some more NFL odds, we've got the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins on Monday, and then Cincinnati at Denver also on Monday. So you have a doubleheader on Monday Night Football. I'm still not used to it, but it's whatever. Take a look at some of the NCAA football odds. We could take a look right now at the National Championship season. That changed. Ohio State is number 1 at +500. Oregon's moved up to number 2 at +550. Texas and Alabama's moved up to 4. So it looks like Vegas is loving Kalen DeBoer, what they've done. Take a look at the conference winners. I think the Big 12, see how the odds have shifted. Texas Tech is running away as the overwhelming favorite at +180. Arizona State is at +430.
Oh, we jumped to Utah.
Yeah. And I think that just comes down to what Iowa State's been able to do. And I think part of it is that loss to Texas Tech. But again, I think the Utah loss to Texas Tech was more indicative of what Texas Tech is doing. So, but I'm not surprised to see them at number one. The ACC, Miami is – that's a big gap in between Miami.
Minus 115.
They're really high on Carson Beck leading them. I need to see Mario Cristobal perform in November 1st before I touch Miami winning in the postseason. So we'll
have to see. I agree, because I feel like one of those games is about to come up.
Mm-hmm. Oregon, Ohio State are right there, so yeah, 1-2, not too far from each other. And I believe do they play each other this year?
They don't. No.
Okay, so. Really, if both teams take care of their business, they can meet each other in the Big Ten title game. And Penn State has an outside shot now after that devastating loss.
Yep.
Texas, Alabama are a tie. If I was to pick between these two right now, it's Alabama because Texas hasn't particularly looked good. Arch Manning hasn't been particularly that great. And you know, with Alabama, Ty Simpson, Ryan Williams, like that's a really good duo. And Things are, though, the wheels are starting to turn for Kalen DeBoer and company.
I mean, it'd take them a minute. And Texas, we're really going to see how good they are in a few weeks when they play OU in Dallas. So we'll see.
Yeah. Taking a look at some of the group of six, we've got the American South Florida with Alex Golish and company. They are leading. They have the leading odds at plus 290. Not too far behind them is Tulane and Memphis. Memphis got a dominant win at FAU. So look for one of these three teams to be the team that goes to the college football playoff as the G6 representative. But North Texas, watch out for North Texas. The Mean Green are really rolling, and they could come up and surprise these three other teams.
Are they still undefeated?
North Texas, yes.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Conference USA, Louisiana Tech has jumped to Western Kentucky, plus 210 odds, Western Kentucky with 260. We got matching. The Ohio Bobcats have a bit of a gap between them and Toledo at plus 145, Toledo plus 360 odds. The Mountain West, still clearly Boise State, minus 135. But I don't know. Boise State's not the same team. They aren't the same team as last year.
They are not, but they are still probably good enough to win the Mountain West. They're going to need probably some help for the playoff because of North Texas's emergence.
Mm-hmm. And then South Florida, and then James Madison at plus 100 for the Sun Belt. So overall, really good. Like my conference winners, it's screwed right now. It's done for.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Yeah, that's whatever. But yeah, I mean, but at least on the bright side, there's other things I could bet for, like the college football playoff for the Heisman winner and other things like that on FanDuel. And go take it away, man.
All right. That will be the conclusion of this week's show. Thank you guys for listening to the reaction show. All you sickos, 49 guests today. Thank you guys for tuning in. The live stream numbers keep growing and growing, so we thank you guys for that. We're going to have a few things to share. Find us on social media, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and Twitch. And then also, if you want to talk ball with us on Twitter, find me on Twitter at SciTieGuy. Find Cody at FullMattCampbell. I did meet some of my Twitter friends in the lots yesterday, so it was a pleasure to meet all of you who I did meet. Cody, you also probably would have met Cody too. I'm sure you'll see some of us in the tailgating lots this fall. So if you do see either of us, say hi. So that is the conclusion of today's show. For Tyler Carter.
For Cody Van Steele alum.
This is the Believe in Iowa State podcast. Roll clones, baby.
Go Cyclones.